Jamie and Locker with you here on the Green Zone. Britton Gray's coming up a little later on to assess what Jeremy O'Day had to say, the general manager of the Grey Cup champions Saskatchewan Rough Riders, as they now set their priorities for what should be a busy offseason, trying to retain as many of their Grey Cup champions as possible. Also a chat with TSN's Josh Lewenberg about the red hot Toronto Raptors. But right now we're going to get an update on the Chicago Blackhawks from beat reporter for the Sun-Times. Ben Pope is joining us right now here on the Green Zone. Ben, welcome back to Saskatchewan.
Yeah, thanks for having me as always.
So I'm just going to start with this video that came out.
Connor, can you please sign a magazine for me, man? You can personalize it, please. You can personalize it. There's only three of us. I've never gotten your autograph before.
So Connor Bedard getting harassed down the sidewalk of an
autograph.
Should
he or should he not have assaulted that man?
But, Ben, how often do you see this around the Blackhawks and Connor Bedard with the autograph seekers hounding him and other players before his time with the autograph seekers around the National Hockey League?
To be honest, I haven't seen it that much. Typically because I'm around the team in more, you know, official settings, where there's security, there's PR employees. There's, in many cases, it's not even open to the public at all. That viral video, which was pretty ridiculous, it looked like they were just walking down the street somewhere, and that's probably typically when it happens, when he's just kind of out and about living his normal life, and that's not really the time when I'm usually around Bedard. And I think also it's in Chicago, people are generally respectful. Like he's talked before that 95% of interactions are just friendly, with someone saying go Hawks or something like that if they see him in the grocery store or whatever. And I think it's also different when it's, when you're a fan of the team in the city versus in that case, it seemed like probably some guy just trying to make some money. I think it's all different context. I remember hearing that during his time as a pass, that was certainly a problem, especially in road cities where they'd get in and just have a ton of people there. But I haven't seen it too much. And generally, he is pretty good about doing that sort of thing if it seems genuine. There was a practice a few weeks ago where there were some kids there afterward, and there's kind of a drop from the stands down to the ice level at Fifth Third Arena where the Blackhawks practice at home. And they were dropping things down, hats and things to sign, and he would sign them and then kind of throw them back up, which I thought was pretty cute. So in general, I feel like he's good about that when he knows it's, you know, a genuine fan and not just someone trying to exploit him.
So, Ben, there is a very involved conversation about the last possible couple of spots on the Canadian Olympic team. There's also a conversation about the American squad as well, but we're focused more on Bedard with his connection to Saskatchewan. Would you put him on the Olympic team right now?
If it were up to me, I would put him on for sure. If I had to bet on whether they actually will put him on, I would probably say no as of right now. I feel like there's just such a commitment to longevity and to veterans who have been around and proven themselves in the international field. And I don't know if that really is as important as the people selecting those teams make it out to be, but that's clearly something that matters to them. And the fact they won the championship last year in that smaller international tournament, there's also probably going to be favoritism towards the guys who are part of that team, considering how successful they were. So I'm not convinced that he would be on it right now. I think he still has more time to continue proving himself. And if he continues at this rate and this high level of play, it's only going to become harder and harder to ignore as the sample size gets bigger. Up to me, though, I think he would be worthy of an inclusion. I mean, we're seeing him play at a top five, top 10 in the league offensive rate right now. And he's doing it with line mates that are solid, but not really necessarily first liners on most teams. It's been Andre Burakovsky, who has been certainly kind of reviving his career, but was more of a sort of a depth score for Seattle, and then Ryan Green, who is a rookie who didn't even put up huge numbers in college and was seen as more of kind of a defensive bottom six center entering the season. So the fact Bedard's been able to elevate them and do what he's doing, where he really is taking over many of his shifts right now, and putting up some of the highest point totals in the league is extremely impressive. The defensive play is, I'm sure, something that Canada will point to as something giving them pause, but he has improved with that. There's still a ways to go, but you're seeing him learn how to use his natural skills in terms of his soft hands, his agility, his vision, in a more productive way defensively and getting more engaged in battles. He's probably never going to be a Selke trophy candidate guy, but he is getting more competent in that regard, and that's another thing that if he continues to prove himself will probably bolster his case.
Outside of the last three losses for the Chicago, of course, they were in a playoff spot. But, Ben, where have you seen the biggest growth for Chicago to take that jump up the standings?
Well, certainly there's really three people you can point to. Bedard, as we just talked about, Spencer Knight, who has been one of the top goalies in the league so far, and it looks like that trade of Seth Jones for him in a first-round pick just continues to get better and better in retrospect for the Blackhawks. Knight is living up to his potential that was kind of heralded when he came into the league as one of the top prospects in the world a few years ago, and his athleticism has really made a big difference in terms of cleaning up some of the mistakes and covering for that for this young defense. So he's been a huge difference maker. And then new coach Jeff Blashill as well seems to be pushing all the right buttons. He's made smart decisions in terms of the new strategies and systems he's implemented to take advantage of his players' strengths and mitigate their weaknesses. I think in particular going with these 11 forward 7 defenseman lineups has really helped to ease such a young defense into this and shelter some of the young guys who need it. And he's also just done a good job with the individual development and coaching and communication, and it just had a really positive impact in that way. And it's also rubbed off in the locker room where with his influence and then with Bedard and Frank Nazar and Knight and Alex Vlasic taking on bigger leadership roles, there's been more of kind of a happier vibe, more positivity, and more resilience in the locker room too, that even when they have encountered some adversity like they are right now with three straight losses, they've still managed to maintain a better mood and given themselves a better chance of breaking out of it.
Ben, I know you're following this story because I saw you tweeting about it, and I absolutely love it. The Mason West prospect, so he is a Chicago Blackhawks draft pick. He kind of fell down a bit, and Chicago grabbed him because there was a conversation about him playing football. And he was very upfront. He said, I want to go back and win my high school football state championship, which he did on the weekend. And I'm curious if you have an opinion as to whether or not he is going to end up playing hockey versus football, because obviously he is a draft pick. He can play hockey right now because he's just finished up his grade 12 and he can move on. I think he's going to go play in the USHL, if I'm not mistaken. But he's now getting interest on the football side of things based on his performance as a QB. 6'7", 18 years old, like a super athlete. You've been following this, of course. Do you have an opinion on that?
Yeah, I think heading into the draft, some teams were concerned about that. The Blackhawks were not, and they actually felt like it kind of worked out in their favor that it allowed him to fall to them where they could trade up to pick him at 29th. They were never really concerned about it at all, and I think at this point that ship has kind of sailed, where his senior year is over and he's still wholeheartedly committed to playing hockey. Okay. He is going to the USHL to play for Fargo. He played for them for 10 games at the end of last season, so he's a little bit familiar there. I talked to him yesterday. He said he'll be there in a week or two after a little rest following the football season. And while it was certainly a storybook season for him, going on to win the championship and do it with his childhood friends the way he wanted to, an awesome story, one of the coolest I've seen in terms of NHL prospects in some time. It wasn't like he was the only reason they won the championship. His individual stats were actually a little bit down from his junior year. And in the championship game, I think he only threw 7 passes. It was just that the running back had a ridiculous game, went for 320 yards and 6
Who's
touchdowns.
Also a hockey player? Is that true?
Yeah, that running back? The high school goalie. I don't think he's a pro-relevant prospect. But, no. Yes, he was also a dual-sport athlete in high school. Really cool story all around. Yeah. It sounds like the two of them have really inspired a lot of people in that community in the Minneapolis suburbs to be dual sport athletes. And an awesome story, but I don't think the Blackhawks are concerned at all about him flipping the football. I know he had gotten some higher level college interest earlier in his high school career, but I think that has died down a bit, and it sounds like he's fully on the college track. He's going to Michigan State next year for hockey specifically. So I don't think that's really a concern, just a really cool story.
Ben, you got to start writing the script for that. That's a movie.
I know. I don't have any script writing experience, but if someone wants to pay me, I'll do it.
Ben Pope, the Chicago Sun-Times on the Blackhawks. One final one, and that is we have to dig into your fashion advice here and expertise, Ben. How well are the Blackhawk black jerseys going over as they brought them back, announced last week?
Well, the funny thing is, I'm not a big fan of the black jerseys. I feel like it's been done by so many teams now, and the reason that so many fans in Chicago love them is the nostalgia factor, which I understand, but it's nostalgia for an era in the late 90s, early 2000s, where the Blackhawks were not a good team. So I'm kind of in the minority in terms of my opinion on the black jerseys, but certainly fans have been gobbling them up, and they've been a huge success. I think the Blackhawks online store hit their daily sales record within 1 hour of them going online.
What?
Last
I like
Friday.
Them. I think they look good.
I know a lot of people do. It'll be cool to see them on the ice this coming Friday when they debut against the Predators. Maybe my opinion will change when I see them out there. But there's definitely a lot of anticipation for that.
Well, Ben, we're in the same boat on that one.
You don't like them?
I don't know. Black jerseys now are just like, oh, yay. That's why I like the Rough Riders, our football team here. They had their alternates. Instead of a black jersey, they went with dark, dark obsidian green.
Which you said you didn't like.
No, I like them better than a black jersey because black's just, okay. I don't know, everybody. Like you said, Ben, everybody's doing it.
All I see is Chris Chelios running around the ice on, because that's. That was what I saw as soon as I saw them.
We'll see how they look, like you said, Ben, on the ice. Thanks for the quick Blackhawks update, Ben. Always appreciate your time.
Yep, thank you for having me.
That is Ben Pope from the Chicago Sun-Times here on The Green Zone. What do you think? Bedard, don't know. But Ben says if he's a betting man, he's saying no.
I still don't think they're going to put him on the team, if I'm being honest.
I think they should as one of the 25.
I'm with Ben.
I don't think they will.
No. Unless if there's one more injury, he's got to be on that team, in my opinion. Although, if there's one more injury, I think you're hard-pressed not to put a Scheifele ahead of Bedard.
I think Scheifele's on there anyways. 1-877-332-8255 is the fan line here on the Green Zone. A lot more to come. We'll check in on the red-hot Raptors. Also coming up on the Green Zone, the not-so-red-hot Vancouver Canucks. And a new book coming out on Geno Ogic. Patrick Johnston's going to join us. He wrote that book on Geno at 4:05, right here on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Jamie and Locker with you here on the Green Zone. Let's get you caught up on the Canadian Olympic curling trials as the men's draw just wrapped up. Mike McEwen's rink, of course, the Manitoba skip with his three teammates from Saskatchewan improved to 3-2. Rylan Kleider drops to 1-4, and that eliminates Rylan Kleider from playoff contention because Dunstone, Guju, and Jacobs are all at one loss, and with just two games left, the worst they can be is at three losses. So Rylan Kleider, John Epping's team, and McDonald, they have been eliminated from playoff contention. Cooey and McEwen are at 3-2. They need a couple of wins to try to make the playoffs. The women's draw tonight will be interesting to see because Kerry Anderson, Rachel Holman, comfortable 5-0, 4-1, but Black, Laws, Sturme, and Skrillic at 3-2 and 2-3, respectively. They have some work to do to try to make the playoffs. A reminder, top three make the playoffs. Number one goes to the best of three final. Two and three play in a winner move on semifinal. Those begin on Thursday. Hope you're having a good Tuesday afternoon. Saskatchewan, Jamie and Locker are with you here on the Green Zone. Patrick Johnston's going to bring us up to date on the Vancouver Canucks and a new book he has launched on the life of Gino Ogic. Maybe a gift idea this Christmas for those who love a good hockey biography.
I don't hate that idea.
Patrick Johnston.
Good
also,
too, right?
Of course, our Green Zone Rider reporter, Britton Gray, will be in on Jeremy O'Day's news conference earlier today, an end-of-year wrap on the Grey Cup champion Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Yeah, the Rough Riders in the Grey Cup, the Blue Jays run. It has been a busy world in sports, but let's shine a spotlight on one of the hottest teams in basketball. The Toronto Raptors, ladies and gentlemen, are near the top of the Eastern Conference, and Josh Lewinberg joins us of TSN. Josh, did you see this coming? The rise of the Raptors?
If anyone tells you that they did, they're lying. Look, I mean, even the most optimistic projections going into the season would not have had the Raptors winning 12 of 13 games early in the year and being now more than a month in and sitting second in the Eastern Conference. And that's not to say that people didn't think that this Raptors team could be good. I mean, I just think there was such a wide range of potential outcomes for this team going into the season because of the uncertainty with Brandon Ingram coming in. Would he be healthy? Would he fit into the system and with the other guys? But kind of the baseline projection and my expectation for this team was to finish the year around 500, hovering over that 500 mark, and probably being in the mix for a play-in spot in the East. But I got to say, like, while I expected them to finish in that range, I thought at least early on it might be kind of rough. The early season schedule was very difficult, 10 of the first 15 games on the road. And look, they were, as I mentioned, integrating Ingram and some new players. There's some newness in this team. I figured it would take some time to come together. But for them to get off to this kind of a start, and then for them to be able to score the ball as they have been, like if we're zooming in here outside of the results in and of themselves and looking at how they're actually winning these games, they're one of the best offensive teams in the league. Now, a lot of that is the Ingram effect, but the way that they've been able to integrate one of the best isolation scorers in basketball into a free-flowing system that moves the ball and gets everybody involved, that to me has been the biggest surprise and, yes, the most pleasant surprise.
Is it sustainable? This is an interesting league, Josh, the NBA, where you can go on a heater, but then you can tank for a month, month and a half as well.
Maybe to this degree it might not be, but look, the Raptors are for real. This is a good team because this isn't just fool's gold. I mean, there was a stretch there at one point where it's like, all right, they're kind of beating up on either some bad teams or some banged up teams. I know their second win against Cleveland, their second of three wins against Cleveland, came with a significant rest advantage. The Raptors were rested. The Cavs are on the second night of a back-to-back. But more and more, they're racking up some impressive wins against quality competition. Again, like I said, the schedule has not been easy by any means. So I think in that sense, and again, just looking at how they're playing, not necessarily that they're winning, but how they're winning these games is encouraging. They certainly have the talent. Now we're seeing that this talent that we knew that they had is fitting together, and that's what the part of it that we weren't quite sure about. And then I'll also say, like, look, well, they have had something on their side here, and that's health. They've, over the past years, dealt with a slew of injuries, especially early on in the year. And, of course, that can put you in a bad spot when you're dealing with injuries and having to dig yourself out of a hole early in the season. Now, they've been fortunate, knock on wood, cross your fingers, that they haven't really had to deal with that. I mean, R.J. Barrett is hurt now. He'll miss the game tomorrow against Indy, his second straight missed game, but it sounds like they dodged a bullet there, that the injury, the knee injury, isn't nearly as severe as they feared that it might be initially. And then, yeah, Pirtle has dealt with a nagging back issue that is forcing them to kind of manage things and keep him out of half of back-to-back sets moving forward. But again, like, they've been pretty healthy here. So at some point, you imagine that kind of adversity is going to hit. It's a long season. Every team deals with injuries. But again, like, the encouraging sign there is that this team is much deeper than they have been in years past. I mean, even without Pirtle, who in the past I've called their most irreplaceable player, I don't think this team is built to withstand a long Pirtle absence. But even if he's going to miss a game here or there to manage the back thing, all of a sudden now they've got Sandro Mamukelashvili behind him playing really well. The rookie Colin Murray-Boyles is undersized, but he can play the four and five, and he's playing really well. They're deep at Barrett's position, so not to say that they're not going to miss him, but they can withstand a Barrett absence. So I think this team is actually well-positioned to take advantage of what's looking like a very wide-open Eastern Conference.
So can you say Sandro's last name one more time, just so I know for next, when I just...
After years of saying Giannis Antetokounmpo, I've gotten pretty good at these things. If for no other reason, then the key is to just say it really quickly. So even if you do make a mistake, nobody's going to notice.
Okay.
Sandro Mamukelashvili.
Nailed it. Okay.
Wow. But I'm going to work on that one. Behind the scenes.
Really quick. Just say it really quick and you'll be fine.
But so let's go to let's go to Darko, the head coach. Like, of course, the first 2 years, fifth, missing the playoffs, improved by 5 wins last year. How much credit goes to the head coach on how this season has shaped up so far?
Yeah, a ton. An early season coach of the year candidate. And probably would be the favorite if not for J.B. Bickerstaff and the Pistons getting off to this incredible start in the East. But look, I mean, one way or the other, we were always going to learn a lot about Darko as a head coach, as an NBA head coach this season. I thought he did a good job the last couple years based on what he was being graded on, like based on the nature of the job. I always say coaching a rebuilding team is one of the toughest jobs in pro sports because you're basically asked to build a winning foundation without actually doing very much winning. But the fact that this team was able to stay together and like everyone's focusing on how great the vibes are now, and they are very good, and obviously winning helps there. But the vibes were pretty good last year, despite the fact that the record was terrible. And that's a credit to Darko for getting these guys to buy in. I think like he understood the assignment from the get-go, which was empower Scotty Barnes, develop the young guys, keep the long view in mind, and then lose enough games to be in the mix for a high draft pick. And if anything, that's where you fault him, is if anything, they won too many games over the last couple of years because all they ended up with was the 9th overall pick in this year's draft. But this year was, I think, going to tell us whether or not he's just the guy that helped you build a foundation, and then when you're ready to take the next step, you go out and you bring in the more experienced coach, or if he can be that coach that helps see the process through and get you to the next level, because there are real expectations now, and with the expectations come pressure. And I think he has held up really well under that pressure, and he's delivering, more than delivering, on those expectations. And so much of, I mentioned earlier, not just that they're winning, the way they're winning, you look at the way that they're playing right now, the style of basketball. This is what Darko has been preaching for a couple years now. That's one of the things that allowed him to emerge as a dark horse candidate when they were looking for a replacement for Nick Nurse, is they loved his view of the way that basketball should be played. On the offensive end, kind of like that European style of play, a lot of ball movement, man movement, quick decisions, defensively flying around and forcing turnovers. And they were doing it to some degree over the last few years. They just didn't have the personnel and the talent to execute it. They were at the top of the league in assists in each of the last 2 years, yet simultaneously at the bottom of the league in offensive efficiency, which tells you they were moving the ball, just not always with a purpose. But now that they have that much-needed talent upgrade and some of the younger guys are ready to take on bigger roles, we're seeing it all come together here. And, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it is a credit to the head coach. In addition to, I think I mentioned earlier, Ingram getting him to fit into a system that wasn't really conducive or didn't really look like it would be conducive to his skill set. And with all of the depth that I talked about earlier, too, it's a nice luxury for coaches to have. But with more options comes the pressure to push the right buttons at the right times. And he's done that. He's done a really good job of managing what has been a very big rotation.
Josh, we only have 60 seconds, but I want you to wrap your head around this. Oklahoma City, Raptors, final and championship.
I don't need the 60 seconds. I'm here for it. Sign me up.
Could you imagine?
That would be a lot of
SGA.
Fun. The Raptors against 81 in the finals. I will take that. I mean, hey, look.
Who would Hamilton cheer for?
Success here is contagious because we talked about the good vibes and how these guys genuinely seem to like each other and they're having fun. Kind of reminds me of another Toronto sports team, and I'm not talking about the team that shares the building with the Raptors.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I wonder who Hamilton would cheer for. Probably Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, you'd think.
No. You go Raptors.
Raptors?
I just like Josh, the idea.
Josh, who would Hamilton cheer for? SGA or the Raptors?
No, Raptors.
Oh, man.
He's already won one. You got to go with Raptors.
Mixed feelings, I think, for a lot of people.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Josh, always appreciate your time.
All right, guys. Anytime. Talk soon.
That is Josh Leuenberg, a TSN Raptors reporter, as they are red hot right now. 12 of the last 13, an 8-game win streak. They are second in the Eastern Conference. Nobody had this predicted.
No.
Nobody had the Raptors playing this well this early in the season. A lot more coming up here on the Green Zone. FIFA disclosed which countries are in which pot for the World Cup draw next Friday.
Okay.
I'll try to explain it next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM. Jamie and Locker with you here in the Green Zone. Here's a warning. You're going to have to learn a little bit about the FIFA World Cup draw procedure. Of course, Canada, U.S., and Mexico hosting next summer's World Cup of Soccer, the biggest sporting event on the planet, coming to Canada, the United States, and Mexico. They released the four pots and which countries are in each pot.
Okay.
So there's 12 groups. Each group has four teams. So you have 12 countries in pot one, the three hosts, and then the top nine on the FIFA rankings go in there. And then down the line they go, two, three, and four. Some of the countries have not yet been identified yet. There's still some playoffs to be had. But next Friday is when they draw the teams.
Oh, so they put him in a pot before they
literally
they
just go,
make the bracket.
Whoop. Here's this one. So Canada in pot two, there's a few countries they won't play because they're in the same division or same, CONCACAF.
Same
right?
Bucket.
So they're not going to take on Ecuador at all because this, and that's how it works. They just draw. Europe can only have two teams in each group. So if Spain gets drawn and then in pot two it's Switzerland, you know they can't have another European country in their group for the World Cup of Soccer. So the draw is next Friday. We now know which countries are in each pot. That was big news for the soccer fans out there today.
Thank goodness. I've been waiting all week. I can go to sleep now.
Canada will be B.
Pot B.
Yeah. Mexico A. United States, D. We already know that because they're the host countries.
Okay, all right.
And we'll see which one will be the group of death